Good afternoon or good morning, everyone, depending on where you're connecting from across the country. We're glad to have you join us today for the ADA audio conference session for the month of May. Our topic today, as you heard from our operator, is Turning 26, a review of the current state of ADA research. The ADA audio conference series is a program of the ADA National Network. This is a monthly program where we address various different topics around the Americans with Disabilities Act. We have individuals today who are joining us both on the telephone as well as through the webinar platform. So we welcome everybody, and as you heard, we will also do a question and answer session at the end of the comments from our speaker. We're pleased to have as our speaker today Robert Gould, PhD, who is the project coordinator of the Disability Rights and Employment Initiative located at the University of Illinois at Chicago within the Department of Disability and Human Development. You can read his full bio on the website as it was posted in advance, and I won't take up additional time at this time to cover all of those things, but Rob has extensive experience working within the area of disability rights and working specifically with a focus on employment. For the start of the past several years, he's been working on a project where he's been reviewing, very interestingly, the research as it relates to the ADA, and that's what we are going to cover today. And hope that you find this topic of interest and get an understanding of really what's out there, what's good, and what's bad. So at this time, I am going to, and what's still needed. I'm going to go ahead and turn over the microphone to Rob, and he will proceed at this time. So Rob, it's yours.
Thank you so much for that introduction, Rob. Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us. I'm here on behalf of a project team here at the University of Illinois at Chicago. And for the last 5 years now, we've been looking across the full body of ADA research through a project funded by the National Institute on Disability, Independent Living, and Rehabilitation Research, or NIDLR. And together, this whole body of research is hopefully will give us a kind of a brief snippet today of what's out there. Just an overview today, I really want to provide you with an overview of the ADA research to date, to give you a basic understanding of what research exists, also talk about why it exists, what kind of things have been tracked, why are they important, and how some of these findings relate to different aspects of ADA implementation, technical assistance, and also advocacy strategies. So we're reviewing some of the implications of the research for practice. It's our hope that this overview can be used to inform and support advocacy efforts and implementation strategies in your different areas of focus. So for today, I'm hoping to talk for about an hour. Hopefully I won't gab too much, so we have plenty of time for questions. I'm going to talk a little bit about the current state of evidence, go into some details about our specific project. I'll talk a little bit about the researchy side of what we're doing, but not too much about that. Following up some findings specifically we have about implementation and practices, as well as looking at the ADA's impact on attitudes and social change. If we have time, I also want to look into some of the areas that we've been gathering specific contextual evidence. We've also drilled down deep into a few areas that the ADA impacts to try and get a more nuanced understanding, and one of those areas is within healthcare, and I'll give you just kind of an example of what we know in that area, not necessarily to make you experts about the research in that area, but just to kind of give you an understanding of what we can do in the future and what kind of information we can gather and hopefully supply people who are interested in it. So a lot of effort's really gone into tracking progress about the ADA for 25 years, and a lot of effort went into celebrating those 25 years through initiatives such as the ADA Legacy Project and ADA 25 celebrations. And as the ADA soon turns 26, I hope that this session can help us reflect on what has been achieved and what still needs to be done. Also, I guess a caveat, I am a researcher, and I'm specifically talking about the academic research evidence on the ADA. We know that research doesn't always match what we see in practice, so if you listen today, it might be helpful to reflect on what type of information is missing from the presentation. As I'll discuss a little bit later on, we've worked extensively with a number of key ADA stakeholder groups, including representatives of the ADA National Network, to confirm aspects of the research, but the ADA also reaches a wide range of groups, and I'm sure everyone on the phone has additional personal experience and other forms of evidence that can inform implementation. So the question to ask yourself during the presentation about these findings is, are there areas of implementation or progress that you expect to be captured in the ADA research? Do these findings that I present today match what you've seen, know, or think you know about the ADA? And your feedback is really appreciated as we move forward and eventually report on gaps in research and practice. So when we think of the research on the ADA and its legacy, we know that the impact of that ADA extends well beyond a list of rules of regulations. The slide you have in front of you is from an ADA anniversary march that took place in New York City in 1993. You might recognize some of the advocates in the front row that include Marka Bristow, Paul Miller, Judy Heumann, and Justin Dart. Together, what this slide shows is that we really are looking beyond statutory compliance when we look at the ADA in terms of both research and measuring its efficacy as a social policy. The broad reach of civil rights is well beyond the court system and is also an assessment of the very social fabric as well as the social movement collectively of people with disabilities. So what I'm saying here is that the ADA's reach is very broad, and reflectively, the social science research trying to understand how the law has impacted people with disabilities is also broad. So many are aware that the ADA is often cited as an example of bipartisan coalition building and politics. And when we start looking at some of the evidence, it really reflects this bipartisan notion. There's widespread reporting across different media outlets that reflect celebrations from last summer, including media outlets that tend to sway left or right politically. The headline on the screen reads, 25 years after passage, the Americans with Disabilities Act has improved the lives of millions. Other news sources, such as the Huffington Post, call the ADA the Independence Day of Americans with Disabilities. Furthermore, we know that the celebrations have not just been at the national level. We hear reports of advancements in municipal implementation and city planning as well. And I think this is important to think about for practice, where we realize that we aren't just celebrating successful litigation, but also thinking about advancements that have been made to our very identity, our social structures, that often avoid the need for formal complaints or even the direct use of the statutory framework. This headline is from the Buffalo News, which says the ADA's 25th anniversary marks celebration of progress, which was actually talking about a local regional celebration that took place in New York last year. Now, if we look at the news from the last year, it's not all butterflies and roses. Other headlines point to the need for more and also gaps where we might imagine that somewhat actually of different areas that we would actually imagine to be within the reach of the ADA's anti-discrimination framework. The headline on your screen reads, after 25 years of the ADA, workplace struggles remain. While some imagined the ADA in 1990 as a cure-all framework for disability discrimination, many others involved in the policy process also realized that there's need for further implementation into both new and existing programs at the same time. Some skepticism or wariness that was really prevalent in 1990 was sometimes seen as antithetical to the excitement about the potential legacy of the implementation of the law. Some people were really excited about seeing the ADA in practice, but others were, I think, realistic and worried that the ADA wouldn't be the solution to all the problems of disability discrimination. And we see this as remained true in many of the headlines and assessments of the ADA's progress 25 years later. The headline on your screen reads, the ADA at 25, important gains, but gaps remain. This assessment probably rings true for many of us working in advocacy, policy, or service provision, as we know that people with disabilities still face participation barriers and disparities in nearly all domains of social living. Everything from employment to transportation to social participation, to give just a few areas that fall under the ADA's preview. If we look at the numbers alone, participation levels have remained relatively stagnant, but that would really give us kind of a simplistic overview or overstatement of the ADA's impact. The next headline reads, "Discrimination doesn't end on the 25th anniversary of the ADA," also from a Huffington Post editorial that talks that many of the different areas that people with disabilities still are experiencing discrimination. We haven't ended it in spite of the civil rights framework. Generally, the pieces that we've seen talk about barriers that are not necessarily disparaging of law, but rather talk about the limits of what a civil rights law or policy can do in practice. From 25 years of research, we know that social change is often more indicative of activities and advances of social movements, cultural practices, and other aspects that may be outside the reach of the law itself, such as structural poverty and deficits in our disability system as a whole, where even if people are able to use the ADA to get in the door to work, equal rights are not a guarantee of fair and livable wages. While many of the pieces are, you know, I'd say generally neutral, in spite of the bipartisan roots to the ADA, we often see a different story being told as well in much of the popular media. The social significance of the ADA is hard to debate. When we look at its efficacy as a social policy, it becomes more difficult, however, to know what to believe given very different representations of the ADA in much of the popular media. Two recent columns actually answer the same question: how has the ADA changed attitudes towards disability? In this column that appeared in USA Today on the date of the ADA's 25th anniversary, titled "How Disability Law Went Nuts," it answers that American attitudes towards the disabled have actually become far more compassionate over the 25 years, but warns that the ADA, by sowing unnecessary conflict, threatens this progress. We see some very clear implications about how people perceive the ADA from columns like this. A Newsweek piece that very same week quoted Andy Imperato of the Association of University Centers on Disabilities said, quote, "We as a society expect more for people with disabilities. Disability is now a positive differentiator. You can't legislate disability, identity, and pride, but the ADA and the civil rights movement around it has taught young people with disabilities to keep their expectations high." Two very different vantages of what it means to change attitudes about disability. We see similar disagreements that can be tracked through 25 years of media coverage, public perceptions, and research on the law's social impact. Now, looking at the specific article, however, I think there's a few important notes to see some of the way this information has echoed since the ADA's inception. The first is that people want to talk about the ADA and work. Work is a huge part of our culture and society, and also with ADA implementation. The ADA is not an employment law per se, but it is where we've seen the most litigation and also the most research. The second part that I highlight of this article is that the ADA is often thought of a law of good intentions. I'll talk about this notion more later in my presentation and its implications for attitudes and compliance, where individuals frequently mischaracterize what civil rights mean and why we have anti-discrimination law. If you hear a buzzing in the background, I apologize. It looks like they've taken the time to mow the lawn underneath our office window, so sorry about that extra feedback you're getting. So the last point that I want to show and kind of highlight on this article is this idea of endless lawsuits. We know that attitudes and research often come with this common criticism that the ADA has spawned endless lawsuits and absurd federal decrees. But as a law, the primary place for enforcement is, of course, in the legal system. We'll talk about some factors that contribute to misunderstandings about the law and how, what those say and do and why it's important when people talk about the ADA as a lawyer's dream answer. What does this actually mean when we talk about its efficacy as a social policy? So, I've given you kind of an overview of some of the perceptions we see in popular media. This gives us a good introduction or preview into some of the major problems with figuring out how the ADA has impacted the lives of people with disabilities. We can get angry at some of these disparaging representations, but we also have to look to the source with over 25 years of confusing and fragmented research. There's a lot of evidence about the ADA out there, or at least summaries of ADA claiming to be evidence. There's constant disagreements, and it's really prevalent throughout the ADA research across all the different titles that exist. Hopefully today we're going to start clarifying what we actually know and what we don't know. An important finding that's come out of our study is realizing that the research only gives us a partial picture of the ADA to date. A lot of the evidence actually exists in our stakeholder experiences and on-the-ground perspectives that may provide a better understanding or nuanced understanding of the ADA in practice. A long-standing critique, as cited in Peter Blank's research from 1994, related to some of the ongoing debates that happen in Congress about the ADA. Bob Dole pointed to the fact that a lot of people didn't actually want to research the ADA early on, but he thought this was something really extremely important to make sure that we know how the law is doing. It took a while to get the research about the ADA up and resulting, often as a result of the ADA being an unfunded mandate. There's no central clearinghouse for data or research information about the ADA. Anecdotally, even strong disability advocates were worried about collecting data about the ADA early on for the fear that it could be used to reform or repeal the law if powerful lobbyists got a hold of information related to costs or even anecdotes about potential headaches in implementation. Luckily, through a lot of activism, we started to collect more research, and we actually saw that some of these concerns were not as great as thought to be. Early research even went as far as to show that most accommodations are free, and still today they continue to be mostly free and often under $50. This type of research information has been really important to continue the implementation and support for the ADA at the federal level. So what do we know from the research? It really depends who you ask. As I mentioned, there's no central clearinghouse for research about the social impact about the ADA. If you're interested in looking just about the legal data, I provided a website here, www.disabilitystatistics.org, that really provides some of the evidence from the legal trajectory. And looking just at the legal evidence gives us a partial picture, but I think it's important, too, just to kind of remember what's out there. Some say that the legal evidence was really indicative of a failed law in the late 1990s, especially the policy failure. The year was that many people were not actually able to even hear their disability discrimination cases in court due to ongoing narrowing of the definition of disability in the legal system. We can look at statistics from that time, from late 1990s to about 2006, 87% of cases that were heard in this period were actually resulted in dismissal or pro-defendant summary judgments. What this means in plain language is that people were almost always unsuccessful in proving discrimination under the ADA until the ADA amendments in 2008. Of course, as many of you know, the ADA amendments provide a list of impairments regarded as disabilities and major life activities, where a limitation in any one of these activities named on the amendment's non-exhaustive list automatically means one merits protections, although that one not hasn't necessarily experienced discrimination. Many now argue that the legal framework is fully intact, roughly 25 years after the law's initial passage. So we're just now getting to some of the legal questions that we would expect to see from the ADA passage. The social science research looking at social change gives us little doubt that the ADA, however, is changing the social fabric of society. It becomes a little bit fuzzy when we dig deeper and there's substantial debate about its efficacy and what we actually use to assess the ADA's impact. Overall, in 2007, the National Council on Disability noted that there's a surprising lack of any ongoing systematic data collection about the ADA from any source, and the result is significant knowledge gaps about many aspects of the law's impact. We can look to some of the general trends just to see where we have areas of promise and areas of concern, but we also have to look at this information with the caveat that some of these areas are beyond the reach of the ADA. Furthermore, in research, it's often very difficult to look at these huge changes in society and say it's directly because of one thing. We know that there's been a lot of other factors that have impacted the participation of people with disabilities over the last 25 years. Some areas of promise include that notion that we're finally seeing the legislative impact intact following the ADA amendments. And also we have evidence of enhanced structural accessibility and compliance over the last 25 years. Areas of concern, however, relate to a stagnant labor force. We haven't seen the employment rate of people with disabilities go up. It's stayed about the same for about 30 years. And we also know that people with disabilities are actually experiencing poverty at a higher rate when compared to people without disabilities. And this has slowly increased for about 40 years now. So some areas of concern at the national level that we want to look deeper into different factors, knowing that the ADA is just one part of the many solutions that works towards addressing these areas of concern. So through this knowledge about the current state of evidence is what brought us to our current research project. Due to the significant knowledge gaps related to systematic data collection about the ADA's impact, we received funding from the federal government, specifically through NIDER at the time, the Department of Education, to really look and collate all of the research about the ADA to get a better understanding of what research exists. And the hope is by getting all this research in one place, we can start increasing the use of ADA-related research to inform behavior, practices, and policies that improve equal access in society for individuals with disabilities. The goal of our research is really to give you a descriptive idea of what's out there, not necessarily to do new research, but perhaps to suggest what's missing and give you an understanding of what's been done specifically about the ADA to date. Just briefly, we've been doing this over 5 years. We're in the fifth year of our funding now. The first year of our funding, we looked at how the ADA has been studied to really get this broad idea of what's out there. After that, we've worked closely with a number of national stakeholders to really make sure that we're looking at priority areas related to ADA research. ADA research is so broad, it'd be impossible to look at all of the data and really get a nuanced understanding of what's working and what's not working. So we had to make some choices about specific areas of research to focus on. Our expert panel includes representatives of the National Council on Disability, Mathematica, the U.S. Business Leadership Network, as well as key researchers and policy gurus and other content experts as needed, who have suggested areas of content area expertise to help us decide where to look at ADA information. And our project started by actually looking at over 30,000 records about ADA information. So there's a lot out there that we had to start going through, hopefully for the purpose of making it more accessible to all of you and to anyone who might use ADA information. We really want this information to be out there and better used in the future, and we're working about plans for the future, about specific plans to get this into practice. We asked three specific questions along the way. As I mentioned, we started with looking at all of the research together. I really don't want to get too hung up on the research practice. At the end of this presentation, I'll post some links to the publications and a technical report that gives more information about the research process, if that's an area of interest to you. And I'm more than happy to answer questions about research process during the Q&A as well. So, as I mentioned, we started with over 30,000 records about the ADA that are out there, and we looked at over 100 different sources of information, including unpublished reports, including different national organizations, as well as academic literature. We've got this down to 980 records that specifically look at the ADA. And when we started looking a little more closely to make sure that the information we're using is only of a certain quality, we ended up with 290 studies. Out of all the information that's out there, those are the only ones that we felt actually made the grade, that actually gave research information while reporting and making sure that it's clear how this information was obtained. The point here is to reduce bias, making sure that only the best information is out there. And as you notice in the fourth step of our research process, we did a coding looking at the ADA's influence in three specific areas. If we have time today, as I mentioned, I'll talk a little bit about the healthcare research. I will talk more about the attitudes research, as that was really a cross-cutting issue across the ADA. And this summer, we'll also be looking at a specific review about the ADA's influence in relation to disclosure. Now, very briefly, not necessarily the surprise, but to give some context about the current ADA research, some areas that have been hot button issues related to practice and implementation in the legal world have not actually been studied in the research or may not actually even be very specific to the ADA. For example, there's growing work at the federal level on emergency preparedness, but there's been virtually no research to date about progress in relation to the ADA. Other areas with less common findings include voting. Some of the most common topics are related to employment, probably no surprise there. Almost half the research to date is about employment. And the next most common is related to education. One of the findings that was surprising to us is related to who's actually been studied in the research, whose vantage points are represented. There's actually very little research across different stakeholder groups, although we know that there's many people involved in ADA implementation. The very large majority has actually been on business representatives, kind of this ubiquitous term employers, looking at their perspectives about the ADA or about people with disabilities or on people with disabilities. What I mean when I say on people with disabilities, we look at their broader participation, but people with disabilities are less frequently engaged as research partners. There's very little research that actually includes the vantage points of people with disabilities and their experience using the ADA and what they've actually gained in practice. So what do we know? Now that I've kind of given you an overview of what's out there, I want to make sure that we start getting a little bit into the findings to talk about some of the findings that we saw across all the different titles and different areas of research. One of the caveats that's very important to look at this project as a whole, in collating the research, there's a gap often in terms of practice and research evidence. It often takes years for findings to be published. Because of this, we know very little of what's happened since 2008 after the ADA amendments. Much of the research to date happened before the time, so we have a limited understanding and only partial knowledge from the research. Across the research, we do know, however, through, I'd say, 20 years of evidence, that we have growing reports of compliance. Well, before we get too excited, we have to know that this is often overstated. We know partially from the body of research that asks people to report about compliance. We also see people then following up to go and check on compliance. This body of research shows a huge gap that people are really likely to overstate their efforts and may actually not be giving accurate reports of how far along they are with ADA implementation. We also know about overstated compliance from knowledge gaps about ADA implementation that are throughout the research. People may rate their accessibility high, but then will admit to discriminatory practices on the same survey. For example, there's a number of surveys that report that individuals, especially hiring managers or HR reps, are very on board with hiring or accommodating people with disabilities and often may be knowledgeable about the law, but often will admit that they have no formal systems to implement the ADA or have general concerns related to attitudes and stereotypes about people with disabilities that I'll talk about more in just a minute. And I think this finding is really relevant and has implications for practice for everyone on the phone who guide people towards ADA information or other entities that actually provide ADA information. On screen, we have an image of the Disability Rights Museum on Wheel that toured as part of the ADA 25 tour. This is an example of a powerful way of informing people about the law, where the museum often toured with events that included educational materials about the rights and responsibilities under the ADA, which could then be compared with direct examples from the museum about the ADA in practice, about success stories that describe how people with disabilities have actually benefited from civil rights, and also provide examples and incidents of discrimination. Through the museum, we often have examples where people with disabilities did not have a mechanism for support or were kept silent because of overt discrimination or segregation. These types of knowledge translation tools, I think, are extremely relevant for getting to that broader issue of compliance. From the research, we know that knowledge about how to comply has steadily increased over the last 25 years. We also know that how to make the ADA a reality and knowledge in that regard, there's still substantial gaps. Some of the main gaps from the research are related to program access, the process of providing accommodations, how do we actually set up systems to provide accommodation, and also more complex applications of the ADA. To kind of complicate this further, finding further, the ADA National Network hosts a Knowledge Translation Center, which is based at the University of Washington, keeps track of the type of information requests that commonly come into the ADA National Network. Their data has showed that while we're having increasingly complex calls, so people want to have a more nuanced understanding of the ADA, it's actually a very small number of calls related to things like program access. This may demonstrate that there's a lack of understanding of these more complex facets of the ADA, or perhaps even a basic awareness as both individuals and entities might not know more about these complex practices related to the ADA. Again, this is an important education point for consumers to realize that civil rights mean much more than physical access, and we have to make sure that the information out there really relays this sort of nuanced understanding. As promised, I'm going to talk a little bit more about what we know about attitudes, and I think this is very important to kind of challenge these findings about knowledge. As attitudes and knowledge about disability are often studied hand in hand, and I think that makes sense, as we often think that achieving the ADA's promise is often a matter of educating society. As the research shows, however, there's a caveat here that we need to make sure that individuals are receiving the right type of education and information. The most common themes or way that the research has been studied, so these are the factors that researchers have looked at to see how they impact attitudes, and also specific to areas where researchers have tried to find out what people think about them in relation to the ADA, we see that there's over 20 different areas of how people have tried to study attitudes in relation to the ADA. So these are areas where we try and see, do these impact attitudes? For instance, if we have more knowledge, does it give us better attitudes? And also we try and see, how has the ADA impacted attitudes about the specific areas? For example, how has the ADA challenged how people view accommodations, and also how they view the skills, abilities, and capabilities of people with disabilities. The best quality evidence we have to date and how we actually get people to improve attitudes about disabilities is through increased social contact. This is a body of research called contact theory. While this is the area we probably have the most evidence, it's not to say that this is the only factor or even the leading factor that makes people improve attitudes about disability. It's just the leading factor for which we have research evidence. So when I talk about these specific areas a little bit more detail, I want you to remember this is what we have research evidence about, and we don't always know if this is what matches up in practice. Now, I mentioned we've been working closely with ADA stakeholders to confirm our findings and also to make sure that these reflect what people are seeing on the ground, but it ultimately gives us a brief look to date. But it's important when we actually are to present these findings, research is often a powerful advocacy tool, so we need to see what's missing when we actually look at the broader aspects of the ADA's influence in these areas. So if you remember what I said about ADA knowledge before, remember that one of the findings we know is that individuals will often report being highly compliant and accept the idea of the ADA, but then will actually report concerns about disability. The most common concerns about people with disability we saw from reviewing findings were some potentially paternalistic attitudes about productivity, safety, and the reliability of workers with disabilities. And these findings are actually echoed in some very recent national data looking at the workplace experience of people with disabilities. A very important report from the Kessler Foundation that just was released in 2015 about workplace experiences with people with disabilities reported that the three most common barriers for people in the workplace are getting less pay than others, reporting attitudes on the part of their supervisor that are discriminatory, or reporting attitudes on the part of their coworkers that are discriminatory. And you might see these numbers in the teens and think that's kind of low. The numbers are actually much higher, where about half of people with disabilities for each of these categories have reported overcoming these issues in the workplace. That is, they've experienced discriminatory attitudes in the past, even if they're not a current barrier to their employment experience. So together, this research explains a common problem that you might also experience in advocacy. You might get a general rosy picture if we don't look deeper, if we're just asking people, what do they think about disability inclusion? What do they think about the ADA? People are actually very unlikely to report discriminatory attitudes or practice, even in supposedly anonymous research. This means that the rate of discriminatory attitudes may be higher than what's actually being reported, where overwhelmingly we see strong support for disability inclusion and aspects of the ADA, but also know we're not getting the whole story. If we go back to the slide I showed early on that disparages the ADA, we might get a better idea about the full picture of the ADA's impact, where attitudes about disability only give us a partial indicator about one's likelihood to accept the promise. Attitudes about disability are extremely complex, and it's more difficult to capture prejudice of calling equal rights for people with disabilities absurd federal decrees, as this article goes on to say. So, we expect that popular media disparaging the ADA is closely connected, reflects one of the most surprising findings that came out of our review. From reviewing the research, we know that knowledge of the ADA does not necessarily connote an embrace of disability rights. Just because we educate people about the law does not mean that they will like it, that they will like the idea of disability inclusion, or necessarily take its broader social goals to heart. Positive attitudes, so saying that we accept people with disabilities, does not necessarily match up to practice. Individuals and organizations are unlikely to reveal noncompliance, internal biases, prejudice, or more systematic issues related to disability discrimination. Increased contact has often been thought of the best way to address these attitudes. However, looking specifically about the ADA research, we know that increased contact is actually shown to have an inverse relationship with attitudes towards disability rights. That is, the more we contact people with disabilities, we don't necessarily have a broader embrace of the ADA. And what's useful here is to look at the research. This doesn't mean that disability exposure, meeting people with disability, leads to an aversion of disability rights. That's not at all what the research says or what I'm trying to say here. But it does mean we need to be careful in how we obtain and use ADA information. Specific types of ADA information, the types that have been studied in the research, I think show a connection to an aversion to the law and practice. We know that compliance, as well as embracing the spirit of the law, is not the same as looking at avoiding litigation. To exemplify this, I want to look at two more articles to give you an example of how information that makes people more aware about the ADA can really miss the picture about the broader social goal. We have two headlines that actually convey some of the similar aspects about how to implement the ADA, but very different meanings. The first reads, how to avoid your business becoming an ADA target, and the second is how to comply with the ADA. This first article that comes from ADAMusing.com is actually one of the most commonly visited sites for ADA information. If you note from the focus on kind of the curb appeal, or making a perfunctory or at glance effort to make your facility is often seen as an important aspect of compliance. This article, however, really looks at the idea of avoiding litigation. When it talks about how to do this, it really talks about making kind of a haphazard attempt where you actually want to put on the facade of compliance, making sure that the commonly seen aspects of your business or organization are compliant, but not actually going to the full practice of looking within your organization to make sure you're meeting the ADA's goals. The second notion here is that training matters, and I think that's commonly reported and agreed upon. But note that this is a private firm here that provides training specifically about the topic in question, avoiding litigation rather than compliance. I provided the link if you kind of want to see, in my opinion, an example of what not to do in terms of embracing the spirit, social goals of the ADA, and actually achieving its goals in practice. This next slide, which comes from a different private website, comes from Inc.com, which is a private website that gives information to people in the private sector. And my goal today is not just to disparage people working on covering the ADA in research or print media, and there are some good examples out there, such as this one. This article by Tim Donnelly uses sources such as the Department of Labor, National Council on Disability, and U.S. Representative Jim Langevin from Rhode Island as key informants as sources. So you'll see some of the same information from the previous article, basic information about the first steps of implementation, but it also talks about the purpose of the law first and foremost and its broader social message. I think this type of information really is what gets the message of the ADA out there and it may have a much more positive impact about changing attitudes about disability in practice. The content follows suit and provides a talk about a comprehensive review instead of a surface check of your accessibility features. Compliance and implementation is much more than looking at physical access. So not that I'm in any way providing legal advice here, but full implementation throughout an institution to me seems like a much more complete way of avoiding litigation by meeting compliance head on and also working towards the broader goals of the ADA to ensure equal access to people with disabilities is met across all facets of an organization. The message I'm trying to get here is check your sources. Where are you getting your ADA information? Where are you directing people to get their ADA information? Are you directing people to ADA information at all? The danger here is that the wrong type of information not only misses the point, but as the research confirms, can actually have a really detrimental impact on achieving the overall goals of disability and civil rights. So some other important findings that impact practice here relate to organizational culture, and I think are closely related to some of those ideas I've already talked about. Organizational culture refers to the ways in which the ADA shapes responses to disability, especially in the workplace, but also in other institutions as well. Fairness is a key factor here of how organizations have embraced or failed to embrace the ADA. Anticipated response to requests for accommodation, so whether they will be seen as fair or not, often play a role in one's likelihood to request them. Perceptions about fairness also play a role in the willingness of individuals to provide accommodations. So fairness is closely linked to if individuals see the ADA as a form of special treatment. I think this is an unfortunate but realistic truth that's been captured in the research evidence. On one hand, I think it's a really important advocacy piece to show that people with disabilities have nothing to be ashamed of in asking for accommodations. There are many folks that think open discussion and disclosure is an essential part of achieving the ADA's goals, and there's a lot of support for that fact. And on the other hand, we know that misperceptions and discriminatory attitudes do continue to exist, and accommodations are misunderstood as special treatment sometimes. I think relatedly, natural supports, which include programs that increase the exposure of people with disabilities, are largely documented as the main way of combating these perceptions of special treatment, so combating that idea that civil rights are special rights. natural supports come in many different forms. You might be talking about top-down diversity strategies and building flexibility to organizational roles and responsibilities. Across the board, organizations have really strongly supported success with this type of approach to facilitate full compliance, as opposed to keeping disability hidden or taboo and often unaccommodated. So you might not think of an after-work social event at the bar or restaurant as a diversity strategy, but when we consider disability and strategies to combat this issue of it being seen as a special law and ensuring that all aspects of participation are accessible, it becomes a way to foster relationships and exposure that's thought of as a conduit to open communication and full implementation across organizations for change. So implementation doesn't necessarily have to be a formal policy or program, but it's really reflected in all the different ways that we embrace disability and make sure that inclusion happens throughout the day and after. So what does it mean from the research when civil rights are seen as special rights versus when they're seen as equal rights? And there's a number of factors documented in the research, admittedly understudied, so it's hard to say how widespread these issues are, that happen when the ADA is seen in these different vantages. When the ADA is seen as a special right, people are less likely to request accommodations, less likely to grant accommodation. Access is often viewed as unfair, which of course can relate to bigger problems within organizations. Some of these issues can be hostility and distrust. While this is problematic for workers without disabilities, we know it's problematic for people with disabilities especially, and can actually relate to larger formal complaints when they experience greater hostility or discrimination in the workplace. When the ADA is seen as it actually is, as a matter of equal rights, we have documented evidence of some very positive factors in terms of organizational change. We know that entities are more likely to comply with ADA. We know that entities are more likely to report disability as an aspect of their diversity strategy. We see more widespread documentation of natural policies and supports. And what may be a very important issue to some, we actually see an aversion and avoiding the formal complaint process. We prevent discriminatory practice before it actually becomes a problem, before that the ADA is needed as response to discrimination in different aspects. So special rights are not just about practice, but are a larger sign about problems and what discrimination looks like. While there's less research to prove this, especially because very few studies have taken the perspectives of people with disabilities, we know that seeing rights of special treatment speaks to larger, often more overt discriminatory practice or attitudes that may be taking place behind closed doors. I have a quote from one widespread study from two researchers at Roosevelt University that looked at mechanisms of disability discrimination and what people with disabilities actually experience when things like rights are seen as special treatment. One of the findings they said is that pejorative and prejudicial attitudes towards non-competitive job incumbents were reportedly fortified by feelings of hatred, resentment, and articulated by coworkers who believe workers with disabilities got special treatment, a free ride, or an easier job. So these factors, misunderstandings about disability civil rights, can actually speak to huge, more problematic issues and what attitude looks like in practice. Discriminatory attitudes are much more hurtful than just being seen as special treatment. And we know that this has widespread applications for practice too. We know that the problem of disability rights being seen as special rights is really common, even if it's not as well documented as we would expect to see in the research findings. Many of you out there probably are very familiar with the issues of service animals. A lot of times we're seeing increasing litigation on this front where people, or entities rather, will have no pet policies And we know that this can actually have a widespread disparate impact, meaning that people who use service animals who are not pets might be forbidden from entering organizations who think that they're actually just making one law, one without thinking of the ramifications. So although some have taken steps to what I think is a positive way of embracing the social change by posting signs that say things like service animals are welcome, we know that we continue to see lots of complaints related to the issue of service animals. And I think this is a really clear indicator in practice of misunderstanding disability equal rights as special rights. So special rights are just one example of what discrimination looks like. Another important finding that we've seen with some mixed results across research is related to disability origin. Decisions and attitudes linking discussions about accommodation or hiring often talked about the origin or what's called the attribution of disability. This is a fancy research way of saying how individuals are blamed for causing their condition. Oftentimes, conditions that we think are more commonly attributed to an individual, such as injuries caused by drunk driving, substance abuse, mental illness, are less likely to be considered meriting accommodation. So some of these more highly stigmatized disabilities are actually seen as less deserving of equal protections under the ADA. Of course, this is hugely problematic and is evidence of one area we continue to see discrimination. However, it's also a really complex finding. When we actually use the legal research to inform our knowledge here, we actually don't have a heightened rate of merited resolution. So we don't actually see people being able to prove discrimination at a higher rate. Even though people are much more likely to accuse disability if they are from one of these protected groups, they actually are not having a good time proving discrimination. So there's not necessarily evidence of acting upon discriminatory attitudes, but this also points that it's actually much more difficult for these groups to prove discrimination in the workplace related to their much higher stigma in association with their impairment types. I provided one study if you're really interested in looking at the legal side more. The EEOC research project gives some specific information about the case law literature if you want to look more on that side of the research. And just briefly, I want to talk a little bit about the ADA research on healthcare to switch gears. A lot of the findings, I think, support and are related to what I've already talked about the wider social impact about the ADA. But we also know a few more areas from the ADA research on healthcare that might be of interest to you to look at a more nuanced understanding about the ADA's implications. Some of the key themes and findings reflect what we see in the broader body, and also some of these speak to a lack of research in key areas. While we can make some assessments about the ADA's impact in areas such as healthcare, we also know that we don't have a lot of good information out there. What we do have in terms of findings relates to implementation. We know that from the research that initiatives to implement the ADA often come as a response to litigation instead of embracing the spirit of the ADA early on. System change, actually taking the broader ideas of the ADA, is often thought to be linked with improving attitudes. When we look at knowledge specifically to entities involved in healthcare, there is evidence that many are unfamiliar with the ADA's purpose and practical applications of the ADA, similar to what we saw with the broader body of research. The need for ADA information is well documented. However, we also know that this is a very weak intervention. For those of you who really want to help and actually start giving more ADA information or connecting people to sources of ADA information, we know that information alone is not necessarily that useful. There's a lot more different ways about how to get change according to the ADA. Especially when we look at compliance, there's more evidence of physical access over more complex issues of program access. And I think this really speaks to the type of information that people received. We're not getting the information out there about some more complex understandings of the ADA as well as to its broader social goals. Moving on, just to say what this means as a whole, we really saw three key findings emerge from the research on ADA and healthcare. The first is that there's this idea of a lack of understanding of access beyond basic compliance. However, the research also rarely goes beyond questions of physical compliance. We need more research out there that really gets to the participatory side of things to really get the perspectives of people with disabilities in practice. Now, I think there's been a lot of good examples about entities bringing this information together, especially if any of you are familiar with DREDF, the Disability Rights Education Defense Fund. They've been collecting things such as the healthcare stories about how people are use the ADA and are experiencing better healthcare. However, the research hasn't caught up with some of the advocacy pieces out there, and we know that research can be a powerful advocacy tool there. So we really need to do a better job of capturing the perspectives of people with disabilities. The second finding is related to knowledge. There's limits of implementation, as I said, about what ADA-specific knowledge is done. We know that entities overstate their knowledge, and administrators in particular in healthcare settings often report kind of an incomplete knowledge base. Similar to the research across the ADA, more complex questions, which are becoming the norm in terms of ADA implementation, aren't at the forefront of their knowledge. We know this is related to information gaps, which is our third finding we found from the research. There's cycles of misinformation out there. It starts with medical students who often have just a very cursory knowledge about the ADA and also about disability. Many of these medical students become practitioners or administrators. Starts with poor knowledge and poor exposure from the get-go, which leads to misguided implementation and the end phase. So these are just some preliminary findings that we hope to work with some key stakeholders this summer to figure out how we start addressing these issues and to really dig deeper into some causes about what's making these gaps in implementation and knowledge. So to sum up of what we've talked about today, there are some common themes across the reviews related to different areas of ADA implementation. For attitudes, stigma and blame, such as that idea of disability origin that I just talked about, are commonly related to disability discrimination. Contact theory, exposing people to disability, is really thought of as one step, but we really need to make sure that that comes with the right types of knowledge and the right type of ADA information to make sure that when we're exposing people to disability inclusion, that we're doing it in the right way. And related to employment, we know a partial picture about the ADA's research. I didn't get into the research on employment rates on purpose today, even though that's the most widespread issue about the ADA research. We actually have been advised that that's kind of a standstill in looking at the ADA's overall finding. That's really just one partial aspect about the ADA's long-term goal, but we know much more about it and more nuanced understandings in relation to aspects about knowledge, attitudes, and barriers to accommodation. So some key takeaways for today, reviewing what I talked about, is that positive attitudes on their own are not necessarily linked with a further embrace for rights. I think this has direct implications for practice, where we need new ways of getting information to stakeholder groups to ensure that the right message is being portrayed. And one aspect that we talk about quite a lot is really embracing the concept about disability as diversity. Especially this is linked to evidence of increasing structural access, organizational compliance, and the ideological support of inclusion. This is something that really needs to be taken not just at surface level, but throughout an organization's implementation plan. We do need more information and best practice about what this looks like in practice. You'll see from the research, I gave you a very introductory view. We know some ideas about what working broadly, but we really don't know specifically about what some of these ideas, what organizational practice look like in practice. There isn't a lot of detail about best practices today. Part of this is because we very infrequently use different disability stakeholders. There's so many people impacted by the ADA that we haven't really tapped into yet for informants about ADA information. We have limited knowledge about the success stories out there, whether it's from municipal implementation plans, from city governments, you know, to businesses, as well as people with disabilities. There's very few research studies out there that really document the success stories. Part of this has to do with that idea I talked about individuals not wanting to talk about potential discrimination. So in addition to success stories, we also know very little about the opposite side, the unsuccessful stories. We need to do a better job of capturing what these look like in practice to really get a complete overview of how the ADA is impacting the lives of people with disabilities. And I think this speaks to one of the largest gaps about ADA information that was recently reported in 2010. The National Organization on Disability reported that 60% of people with disabilities believe the ADA has made no difference in their lives. We need to do a better job of getting the ADA information out there so that it can be used as a tool. There might be people who are using the ADA who benefit from the ADA on a daily basis, but don't know that this has been such a monumental aspect of disability policy over the last 25 years. Some takeaways, some lessons learned from our research. We know that this gives us some exciting but also some worrisome news that we're only very recently seeing the legal interpretation of the protected class. This research only includes, I shouldn't say only, mostly includes information up until the ADA amendments. We actually have very few data points after the ADA Act of 2008. We know that we only have a partial picture, and we know that we need to continue looking beyond research and really looking into practice. We need more innovative ways of engaging with disability groups as partners, storytellers, translation experts, and dissemination gurus to make sure that ADA information is being used and valued. The next steps for our project as a whole. Over the summer, we're going to be finalizing some of the findings related to healthcare and disclosure. So if you're interested, please make sure you check on our website, which I'll post in a second here, and you can see some of those findings that come out of those two areas. We also really hope to try and make this information more accessible. Right now, we have all of this research in a giant database, which has been our five-year project. The next step is really to make sure that we have this information so it's easily accessible to all the different types of groups that might want to access ADA information. So ongoing, we really need to establish more best practices to seeing how the ADA can be used and excelled in as well. Beyond compliance, beyond diversity, what really makes excellence in ADA implementation? We need to increase our understanding about how ADA information is used, and we need to really make sure that we're talking to the full gamut of people with disabilities and other advocacy groups that are impacted by the ADA. I just want to end with a special thanks to our expert panel. These are the groups of the 12 individuals that have helped us along the way, given us quite a bit of guidance in terms of making sure our findings are on point and giving us direction for areas of need in terms of ADA research and information. So thank you all to all the people who are on this slide. And now I guess we'll have time. We have about 25 minutes left for questions. And if you're interested in following us, as I mentioned, our technical report is available online at adata.org/research. And we also have three publications that are available, two of them through open access online in the Journal of Disability Studies Quarterly. And if you're specifically interested in the research process, I'm happy to share upon request our article about the research process, which appeared in the journal Work. So thank you all very much for listening in today, and now we'll open it up to questions.
Great. Thank you, Rob, and I know that's a lot of information and a lot of detail for people to absorb as a group. At this time, I would like to ask if the operator would please give some instructions to those that are on the telephone on how they can go about asking questions, and then we'll look at what questions might have come in through the electronic means. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then one on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, please press the pound key. One moment for questions.
Great. Thank you very much. So while we're waiting here, I've got some that were submitted electronically. One is person is asking, how can disability organizations have more of a role or a voice in ADA research? Do you have any thoughts or any comments on that?
Thanks so much for that question. I think it's very, very important. I think it's a two-way street. First, I think research groups need to really actively be involved in contacting advocacy groups. I know research can sometimes be daunting. I also realize that maybe I contribute to the problem today by giving a ton of information. The goal is really to make sure that we're involved in ongoing conversations, especially I think in terms of local implementation. Things like town halls with local independent living centers are a great way for researchers as well as advocacy groups to meet. I know as a researcher, we're often at these town halls, especially in independent living centers, where people talk about things like civil rights in action, and it really informs what we do in terms of our advocacy and in terms of what we study. So making sure that people show up and really get the word out about what discrimination looks like, how they're actually using the ADA in practice, really helps us to get a better understanding, especially we'll never get a complete picture of what the ADA is by reading and just looking at the research today. We really need to get out there in the community and connect and collaborate.
Good, thank you. Another question. In everything you're saying, are you saying that the majority of research over the past 25, 26 years on the ADA was, in quotes, this person has, bad research, and how does it compare to research that's been done in other areas of rights, like gender rights or rights related to race and other rights groups?
That's a great question. So to start with the first question, is the research out there bad research? There is a lot of bad research out there. We did our best to try and review that met a certain quality. So there is a lot of good research. That being said, it only gives a very partial picture. I think that there is bad research in that a lot of it gives kind of contradictory findings. And I think the bad part of it is that we really haven't included people with disabilities. So it does a good job, for instance, of getting to questions like employers' attitudes. And I think those studies have been replicated to the point that we're ready for new ways of studying the ADA. So it's not necessarily just bad as much as we need some new directions. The second question, how does this compare to research on other groups that have had civil rights laws in practice, I think is very important too, to really look at what new directions we need to go in. Some of the issues, I think, are very similar to what was seen very early after the Civil Rights Act of 1964, especially the issues of seeing equal rights being seen as special rights. That was really common, especially when affirmative action was such a hot-button issue and talked about in the media. The key difference here with disability is that there actually is an element of structural support that's often different than what we'd see for other civil rights groups. I'm talking about reasonable accommodations here. And I think that we've had a slightly different trajectory. That being said, we haven't had the complexity of research questions that we've seen from other civil rights groups, especially related to poverty. And I think this is kind of the forefront where we need to go in the future. We know, very broadly speaking, that disability can cause poverty, and poverty can cause disability. And we know that people with disability have experienced poverty at a much higher rate. We know very little about what's been done to combat that. And we also know very little about people with disabilities who experience extreme poverty. Part of that has to do with barriers about how research is collected. So many of people with disabilities live in segregated settings or big institutions or jails, for that matter, where we often don't go to collect data. So research only provides a partial picture. And I think in terms of poverty, that's where we really need to go to not only catch up with some of the other research on civil rights groups, but also to catch up in implementation. It's a huge issue that needs to be better addressed.
Thank you. Another question that was submitted, what are the messages about ADA research in general that should be taken back to researchers who might be looking to conduct research on the ADA in the future or funded to do so?
That's wonderful. I'm going to go back to this slide, if I can find it here, about attitudes about disability. So attitudes about disability, I think, are a huge, widely studied aspect about ADA implementation, and I think are a good proxy for looking at the ADA and social change. The key factor here for researchers is the issue of perception bias. This is the fact I was talking about early, where entities are unlikely to report noncompliance or discrimination. And this is important for practitioners, too, when you're actually going out in the community and working with organizations. We often don't get them to talk to us about what discrimination is happening, what barriers they are experiencing. So in future research, we kind of need to lift this veil of ignorance. We know that people with disabilities experience these barriers, and we need to come forward and use different mechanisms to actually target groups that are doing good jobs, or maybe groups that we know are having these barriers. So using people that really have that on-the-ground knowledge, such as independent living centers, technical assistance providers, ADA coordinators, going to them as kind of conduits, people who know where they're experiencing problems, I think can be a really innovative research strategy. Using a wider group of people who have a more direct on-the-ground knowledge about the ADA and its implementation is going to get us better research. It's gotten to the point where often these studies try and say, does discrimination exist? Does it exist in different organizations? And where the bad research is saying that we know this. We know it exists. It's very difficult to characterize how often it does, but we need to get to how do we change it? Where are the success stories? Where are the excellence in ADA compliance happening? So getting to those, I think, is really going to be a key area for researchers to do better research in the future.
Great, thank you. So we have someone who has given us a scenario and asking a question about that. This is someone who's had medical care from a large organization that has many facilities in different cities. This person had an issue with them about the lack of accessible forms. They worked with an ombudsman on this issue, and later they learned that the organization has a disability committee to help the organization become more accessible. It's good that it's coming from the top down. Is there any research to see if these types of committees or practices are more successful if they have the involvement of people with disabilities actually as part of those communities or processes? So I think it's a question she's saying right now there's nobody with a disability that's part of that process. So are you familiar with any kind of studies or research that's looked at the involvement of people with disabilities and whether or not that makes a difference? I think is kind of the message there.
That's a great question. So to answer that question about does it make difference for people with disabilities to make to be a part of committees like this. I really think we have to think back to that key advocacy point, nothing about us without us. In the ADA specific research, unfortunately, I don't think that's an area that's studied at all. And it sounds like actually a very important way. What actually changes when we bring people with disabilities to the table? However, the broader body of disability research over and over again shows that when people with disabilities are included, and I'm not talking about just in a perfunctory or tokenistic way, when they're actually leading decisions, we have more success at the table. I mean, even looking back to early ADA implementation, what made the ADA a successful policy from the get-go, what got people so excited about it, was early research was documenting people's experience of discrimination, what it actually looked like, putting a face to it and getting those life stories of people with disabilities. In 1986, the National Council on Disability released a report called Towards Independence, which included over 2,000 first-person accounts of people with disabilities experiencing discrimination that was really used to shape the law itself and its related implementation plan. So I think what this person on the phone is really getting to is a huge and important aspect. Unfortunately, it's poorly captured in the ADA research, important for future research, but if you look in the broader research and disability together, it's there. It shows time and time again that it's essential to have people with disabilities involved in implementation at all levels.
Great, thank you. Another question for you here. A lot of people say that the ADA has done a better job of helping people who already have jobs rather than helping people who are looking for jobs. Does the research actually support that? I mean, is that just anecdotal that people are saying that? Or is that something that is actually supported by some of the studies?
Good. That's a really interesting question. Part of it, I think, has to do with this idea of people are always trying to find out, did the ADA impact the employment rate of people with disabilities? And what the research largely says to that is that that's really beyond what we can expect to be the direct impact of one law, especially of the civil rights law. And there's been literally hundreds of studies trying to look at the employment rate, and what they've come to the conclusion is that it really is beyond the impact of the ADA itself to directly impact the employment rate of people with disabilities. I think that's important to remember when we think of the limitations of civil rights, but also to have realistic attitudes of the change we'd imagine to see from the ADA. As far as actually helping people who want to achieve work, we also know from the research evidence that hiring is by far the most difficult area to capture discrimination. The limited research out there about people's experiences with discrimination over and over say they're experiencing it at the hiring level. And a really interesting study came out of Cornell this year that actually used a common way of looking at other civil rights laws where they mailed the cover letters. And the only difference between cover letters was one person saying they have a disability, one not. And overwhelmingly, the person with a disability is getting less callbacks and, of course, is less likely to be hired at all. So we know that discrimination exists before people get in the door, even if the research itself has not had a good time of proving that. And as far as the research goes, yes, it does really support that idea that people with disabilities are experiencing more benefit once they're in the doors. There is a lot of evidence about people who actually know about the ADA, know about its social goal, really are more equipped to benefit from it in practice. And it's difficult to say that it's not helping people who are looking for work, especially because the research really has not captured this to date, and I think that's closely related to the difficulty in proving, documenting discrimination in hiring. So closely related.
Great, thank you. Another question here is, will this study that you've done here, where you've looked at other research, be used by entities like funding sources to make decisions about what they would fund in the future?
Yes, that's a very important part of what we want to do with this. So part of our reporting duties for the project as a whole is that we will go back to NIDLR, the National Institute on Disability Independent Living Rehab Research, and kind of give an overview of where we see the gaps are in practice. We also take into account the different stakeholders who have worked with us, as well as any feedback. So if you see gaps that we didn't talk about today, really encourage you to get in contact with us. So NIDLR is actually one of the largest funders of disability research in the U.S., especially in terms of university research and funding. So when we go back to them, I think this will have clear implications about the type of research about the ADA and about disability that's funded in the future. So it's really a great opportunity for everyone to get involved too. We really do take into account the on-the-ground experience for people who work with the ADA to really make sure that we're capturing and portraying evidence in a way that reflects what people are seeing in practice.
Great, thank you. Operator, were there any questions that were queued in from the telephone?
I'm showing no questions on the phone lines.
Thank you. We have a question of will future research include emergency preparedness with people with disabilities, and how would you envision, and if so, how would you envision that might occur?
That's a really good question, and I won't pretend to know more about the area than I do, because that's honestly just not an area that I've personally looked into, and where we have some experts who have worked closely with us who might have a better understanding. I do think future research will start looking at that. It's a huge hot issue, especially related to both climate change and an interest in emergency preparedness and terrorism. I've heard anecdotally, both from the National Council on Disability and Department of Justice, that they're very interested in looking at these issues in research and practice. So I think it's when it gets that interest from the federal level, it's very likely that it will be studied more. I don't have a good idea or suggestion for studies about how to do that at the moment, but a wonderful question. Thank you for sharing.
We have another question here. What are barriers to addressing, kind of a roundabout way here, what are the barriers to addressing some of the barriers to ADA implementation that you discussed today?
I was a little confused on the wording at first, but I think that makes sense. So what are some of the barriers to actually using this information? Part of it, I think, is that it's so fragmented. A lot of ADA research, if you Google, will be in a million places. The more we can get it in one place, the more we can turn it into plain language findings, I think the more usable it is. One part of our project that I forgot to mention is, in the future, we're hoping to make quite a few one-pagers that look at some of these issues. I probably talked about 100 different issues today, and we want to turn each of those into little one-pagers so that when people have these questions about what research exists, they can quickly access and get plain language summaries. I think another barrier has to do with the complexity of not only research findings, but what disability discrimination looks like in practice. There's that finding I talked about earlier where sometimes people might say, sure, we love having people with disabilities part of our communities, we love having them as employees, but when you actually drill down deeper, they don't have that same sort of appreciation for the ADA. And when you actually need to work to educate individuals, it's not a one-off time. It takes time to really understand the ADA as a whole, the broader social message, what disability civil rights mean, and that's just one step. Then you have to get to the research too. So the education process is often slow. Because of that, it's really, really important that we have really talks like this today, that we continue to have more collaboration and talks between advocacy groups, implementation gurus, researchers to make sure that that translation gap is shortened in time and practice.
Great. Thank you. Thank you very much. We're getting down to the bottom of the hour at this point, so I just want to check with the operator. Were there any questions from the telephone at this time?
And there's still no questions on the phone line.
Okay. So at this time, I would like to thank our presenter, Dr. Robert Gould, for sharing the results of this project and the study and the depth of knowledge that he has collected about the 26 years worth of research. And you heard, and probably he would have lots of stories to tell about all of the documents and the reams and reams that they went through to call down to get to some of the meteor stuff and some of the things that stuff is out there that you know, has been published that really is not very meaningful or was poorly designed or poorly done. But hopefully we can learn from that, and in the next 25 years going forward, that more rigorous research will be done, and that research can be readily used by people with disabilities, communities, and other organizations and such to really help understand better the ADA and how it impacts the lives of people with disabilities, the importance of it from a disability rights social justice perspective, and that we learn more about the world that we live in as it relates to these issues and the changes that are beneficial and what makes them beneficial and some of the best practices. So thank you very much. You will be receiving an email at the end of the session today which will contain an evaluation. We do appreciate and value your feedback, so ask you to make sure that you fill that out. I'll also give you information about the availability of the archive of today's session and when that will be available as well. We invite you and welcome you to join our next session, which will be held in June of 2016. This is going to focus on the rights of veterans with disabilities in employment, housing, and transportation. And we have representatives joining us from Veterans Administration and from the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission for that particular session. Please note that there is a change in the date for this particular session. We typically hold our session on the third Tuesdays of the month. We are holding the next month's session on the fourth Tuesday of the month, largely due to the fact that many of the individuals who are involved in this session and involved in our program will be involved in the National ADA Symposium, which coincides with this particular, the third week of June. So we have moved the session to the fourth week of June, so please note that date change. If you have not registered already, please go to www.ada-audio.org. And register for the session. But again, make note of that date change if you have it on a regular on your calendar, that for the month of June of 2016, there is a one-week difference in our typical date. In July, we will go back to our regular third Tuesday of the month schedule. So again, thank you very much for your participation in today's program. Thank you to our speakers, and everyone can have a great day.
Ladies and gentlemen,